There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are influencers on the internet. Which means Tubi is more popular than sponsored posts for digestive enzymes and high coverage foundation. More popular than soft launching your boyfriend. More popular than making boomers explode with rage when you tell them how much you make on a single post. Tubi, it's more popular than influencers. See you in there.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Greetings and welcome to the Believe Knicks podcast. I'm Matthew Miranda, as always, joined by Stacey Patton. But I'll tell you what is not, as always. The New York Knicks have won more playoff games in the last 40 hours than they did the previous 9 years. So if it feels like there's a lot of excitement and stuff going on, there is. There is a definite energy and buzz right now around Knicks fans and the Knicks team, and there should be. And we're going to get into a whole bunch of why. But first, as always, betonline.ag is your number one source for all your basketball info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest player reports for this year's pro basketball playoffs. BetOnline is always your sports information headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your sports wagering needs, including but not limited to basketball, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League. Rangers are still up. Devils didn't deserve to win, but that's hockey, including UFC and even boxing. BetOnline is the fastest, easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games. You can play right from your home. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Be sure to use our promo code BELIEVE, Español B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Stacey Patton, what is your favorite casino card game?
Oh, it's easily Texas Hold'em Poker.
Yeah? Okay. Nice.
I used to play a lot, and I've played a lot. I actually wrote a thesis when I was an undergrad on a very simplified version of poker, Von Neumann poker. Look it up. But yeah, definitely poker.
I'm a simple girl. I'll stick with blackjack. It's about as high as I can count. I'm going to leave it at that. Plus, the if anyone remembers the blackjack scene in good Lord, what's his name? Austin Powers. It still makes me laugh. Like, every single time I see it, it still kills me. So, let's talk Knicks and... Today, Sunday, they just completed a 102-93 win over the Cavaliers to take a 3-1 lead. Knicks won both games at home, pretty much led most, if not all, of the way in those two games at home. In eight quarters, Cavaliers only scored more than 24 and a quarter once, and that's when they scored 26. There's a lot of ways you can say it.
It has to be, right?
What's that?
Must be the third quarter of this game, right?
Yeah, I think it was. It was, yeah. I mean, it felt like an explosion. It was 26 points. So
that tells you, yeah.
That shows you, I mean, that shows you where it's at. I remember, well, forget that. There's a lot of different ways to characterize the two games. They were different. Obviously, game three was more of an ass-whooping. This one was more like game one, a little closer throughout, even though the Knicks mostly had the lead, although... I'm sure we'll talk about the specifics of the fourth corner lineup that put the game away. There's a lot to talk about. The thing that stands out the most to me, Tom Thibodeau made another adjustment that I wasn't sure I would see from Tom Thibodeau, which was in that fourth quarter. I mean, Mitchell Robinson had a very strong game, very impactful, but he put Isaiah Hartenstein in, and that was the right play. Hartenstein was brilliant in the fourth. Julius Randle struggled. He has struggled shooting throughout the series. He's had some good moments defensively, but in this game, he was kind of just struggling, period, with everything. And Tom Thibodeau played him the whole third quarter. It wasn't happening. fourth quarter, he brought in Obi Toppin. And this kind of Hartenstein, Toppin, RJ, Josh Hart, Brunson lineup really just that was the difference. That was the separation. And props to Thibodeau. I was wondering, 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left. We've seen that all season. In those moments, even if Toppin's playing well, he's going to bring back in Randall. He did not. That's what stood out to me the most from this game in a positive sense, though God knows, thankfully, there are many more positives to pick from. What stood out to you from this game the most from game four?
I'm going to start with RJ Barrett. I thought he was incredible. RJ Barrett was, maybe people will disagree. RJ Barrett was the best player on the floor.
Has he gotten that many RJ Barrett chance the prior few years combined that he did today? He got at least four chances in this game today.
Yeah, he was incredible. He's been much maligned throughout the season. Look, I have never been that down on RJ Barrett. I've never been that high on RJ Barrett.
Yeah.
If there were people giving Jimmy Butler comps to him, I didn't see that, because Jimmy Butler is a freak in terms. Jimmy Butler, go back and look at his college stats. His free throw rate was at its lowest in any of his 4 years, 0.85. His actually freshman year, smaller sample size, he had a free throw rate above one, which for those keeping score at home, that means that you're getting more free throws than field goal attempts. He was and RJ is really good at drawing free throws. Jimmy Butler is an outlier in that sense.
We're on a DeRozan comps early too to Barrett, which never made sense.
Yeah, he doesn't have that mid-range game. What he does have, but he can get 2 feet in the paint at will. And when he makes good decisions, that's a really lethal combination. Does it? But I always felt like that was his main thing. He can get 2 feet in the paint, and he is a good passer when he is making his reads, when he is conscious of those. And I've also never felt like that was an all-star unless he's playing elite defense. Because I think that, that is a third option, a guy who can kind of attack closeouts and make the right read off of them. But if he's not adding elite defense and he's not a great shooter, well, over the last two games, he went 3 for 6 from three in game three. He did not get his threes to fall today, and he struggled weirdly from the free throw line. I don't think there's anything to that. It was just kind of, he missed some. But the larger point is that he was just he did everything you could have asked. And when he's giving that, and like on defense, his effort has been superb all series long. I mean, he's been great on Darius Garland. To the extent that he hasn't been able to guard Darius Garland, it's had a lot more to do with the Cavs scheming Brunson onto Garland, and it's really not something RJ can fight through. The last two games, he has been superb, and tonight he was the best player on the floor. And yeah, Stephen A. Smith has been crying all season long, why didn't we trade for Donovan Mitchell? You left RJ Barrett, which first of all is a false statement, right? It was not, they were not getting Donovan Mitchell without trading RJ Barrett and Quentin Grimes, and quite possibly Emmanuel Quickly, or giving up four first round picks. So it's a false claim. But even if you really look that, Donovan Mitchell was in hell today, and we can talk about it later. And Matt, if I forget, I need my Deuce McBride love session today. He's fucking awesome. But RJ was, and the thing is that like Brunson hit some big shots. I'm not like Brunson, he did what you know you're gonna do, but he had some horrible decision making.
He did.
And especially when the Cavs were getting back in the game, and it seemed like every time during that third quarter when the Cavs were punching back, they really had it going. RJ was making plays either on defense, getting switched onto Garland, or getting to the hole in a way that Brunson couldn't, or making passes and making the right play. Like it was everything we've wanted to see from RJ Barrett. You gave him a $100 million contract. Knicks fans have been mixed about was it worth it and all of that, and he's doing that. And yeah, like you wrote an article about this, Matt. I want to give you a chance to talk about this because you wrote a very prescient article. During, I think, when Knicks fans' belief in RJ may have been that it's Nader. I don't know the N-A-D-I-R. I don't know the pronunciation of that
Nader.
Word.
Nader.
Nader. Yes. You wrote a good article about it, but he's only 22 years old. Like, 22-year-olds, unless you're Anthony, like, we hold him to the standard. He's a third overall pick, so he's got to be Anthony Edwards. He's got to be on this line. He outplayed Donovan Mitchell today. He was better on both ends, and he kept the Knicks afloat. Like they don't come close to winning this game without RJ Barrett. He was incredible. That's what stuck out most to me, and I think that applies to game three as well. Like, you know, the other guys showed up. The defense was better, or you know, they were more successful against the Cavs. And the Cavs had some good adjustments today. We can talk about that too. I think the main one was second half using Garland more in off ball action and putting Brunson in tougher spots. RJ Barrett was the best player on the floor today. I don't think there's and in a series where everyone said the Cavs had the advantage because they had the best player in the series. Well, their quote unquote best player in the series, you know, the guy that everyone's talking about, went 4-for-17. A big part of that was RJ Barrett, and RJ Barrett was fantastic.
There's something very different about being on this side of this kind of a series, for me anyway, as a Knicks fan, because it's such a flip on what has been the prevailing logic around their team building for a long time. The Knicks have often been the team that has either pursued or succeeded in getting like the best name in the deal, or when the Knicks played the Pacers in 2013, like Paul George was great at that point already, but Carmelo Anthony was higher in MVP voting. Carmelo Anthony was, I think, still more highly regarded as a player. He was the biggest name in that series. So what came of it? There's three really interesting kind of exemplars of where the Knicks depth is winning in this series. One is RJ Barrett, and the fact that if you look at Cleveland, if Mitchell is not really hitting, hopefully for them, Darius Garland is. And we saw that today. Like, it was a game because even though Mitchell wasn't really, especially in the second half, Mitchell, Garland was there.
After the five turnovers in the first half. Shout out to Deuce McBride. But, I mean, Josh Hart's defense was incredible all game. But, yeah.
So after, if those two are not happening, there's nothing going like for Cleveland in terms of creation. The Knicks are fortunate in that Brunson has kind of found himself, I think, the last couple of games, but even in a series where their all NBA player just doesn't have it, they have someone that, okay, we can leave Randall on the bench because we have a guy who's having the kind of game that he's having that we know he can have, and RJ Barrett. Two, the Cavaliers came in, I think rightfully, lauded for having a pretty exceptional pair of bigs. The Knicks bigs have outplayed them, and it's not just Mitchell Robinson at times being better than those two on his own, but Hartenstein in this game in particular, in the late third, fourth quarter, Hartenstein did everything. Hartenstein, there were block shots, there were outlet passes that got breaks going, pressure that he put on the Cavs on the offensive glass. And they don't have, again, after Allen and Mobley, like Mobley was in foul trouble, they still played him a ton, but they don't have, okay, we're going to sit you the rest of the quarter or the rest of the half because we know so-and-so. They don't have that. I'm still mystified as to why they let Kevin Love go the way that they did this year, because he seems to me like he would have been great in a series like this. Third, and you mentioned him before, when the Knicks were in a spot of, we need to go deep into our bench. Like, we're bringing McBride. We need McBride to come in and do something. When the Knicks go deep into their bench, they're still bringing in people. He came in. He was playing. He played great defense. He had a three, I think, in the first quarter, maybe late in the quarter. They're going deep into their bench, bringing a guy in that they trust is going to make something happen, and he does. There's really no one. Now that LeVert has become a starter, really, for the Cavs, there's no one who comes off their bench that I have any concern about. I cringe a little every time Okoro takes a three because I'm terrified. Like, if he hits three in a row, what does this mean? But like, that doesn't seem like it's happening. In terms of what they're actually producing, just yet another example of Donovan Mitchell is the best player. Asterisk in this series because Jalen Brunson did not score. You know,
every time I wrote about this in my recap, every time Jalen Brunson sees the. And Donovan Mitchell has not played bad defense. Are you with me with that? Like, I don't think he's playing defense.
There's nothing to do.
I know you watch more. I was very much a toddler, small kid when the Knicks played. Or sorry, when Hakeem Olajuwon is prime. But yeah, it felt a lot like David Robinson trying to guard Hakeem Olajuwon. Like you see all these clips, and it's like David Robinson is in the right position. He stays on the first fake, stays on the second fake, third fake. Oh, he gets beat. Or if he just stays down the whole time, Hakeem Olajuwon just keeps a jumper. Like, what more can Donovan Mitchell do? Like, there's nothing he can do. And I think there's a psychological aspect, I think. And I'd be curious to your point, you know, if you've seen this before. But it seems like Brunson just ups his confidence so much and his belief when he has Donovan Mitchell on him. And Donovan Mitchell doesn't seem to be, you know, he seems to be playing more aggressive, but it just doesn't matter.
He does. I would say the difference there is that Olajuwon,
better than David
Robinson on both ends of the floor. And if Brunson is guarding Mitchell the whole game, I think Mitchell's probably putting up better numbers. But
I don't know about better numbers, but I know that they would probably go toe-to-toe. But, yeah.
To your point, I mean, it's really been striking watching as the series has played out the things that you expected to happen, like the Knicks have better depth, and that's been extremely evident throughout the series, and things that maybe you didn't anticipate happening, which is that really for the Knicks, in terms of the offensive load, I would say not only Barrett, but Josh Hart has been a more consistent contributor over the course of the series than Randall has been. Mitchell Robinson, maybe. I haven't looked at the numbers, but you know, Mitch has been pretty steady. Randall had, I think, 19 and
he had 7 and 8 in the first half. The Knicks had 11 offensive rebounds in the first half.
Oh, they have
the first half alone, and they also won the turnover battle. Like, the thing is that the fact that the Knicks were only up 9 at the halftime was a little disappointing, because like you say, the Cavs forced turnovers, the Knicks are great on the offensive glass. The Knicks won both of those handily. Okay. And they shot more threes, and they were most good looks. I was a little worried. They're like, they're only up 9. And in the third quarter, that kind of came to the right.
Yeah. I was expecting that. I did not. I was very – I thought Cleveland was going to win this game, because I thought the teams are close enough that it was hard for me to imagine either team taking a 3-1 lead. They just seemed very evenly matched to me. I thought the Knicks would lose, and then game 5 would be like, you know, a battle like all the way down to the end. But I just thought probability wise, two teams that seem very close. Maybe I was wrong about that. Maybe this is similar to Atlanta a couple years ago, where you've got two teams. I think the Knicks and Hawks had the same record, and the Knicks had been better in the regular season head to head. But it just played out that, you know, when they met game after game, the Knicks did not have answers for things that the Hawks presented. And none of the last two wins, there was nothing fluky about them. You know, I saw some, even the Knicks, I think, were maybe to stay humble. After game one, I didn't get a real strong sense that a lot of people thought, oh, the Knicks were just a better team. I think they had a lot of offensive rebounds, and Randall got that one at the end, but it was anybody's game. And obviously, New York and Cleveland are very, very, very different vibes and arenas, but I didn't see anything in two games. I was very nervous after game two that the Hawks had found an adjustment that I wasn't, until you see, I didn't know if the Knicks would counter. Because when Atlanta made an adjustment, I felt like, oh, that was it. I don't feel like I saw anything over the last two games that has me afraid that Cleveland's going to win two in a row, much less three in a row.
Yeah, I think Tibbs deserves a lot of credit. I've been critical on this pod and in other places. It's been a very fun, you know, on Twitter, I've definitely gone and this pod too, gone at GB Bickerstaff for giving the refs. I think he's had good adjustments. You know, he, after game one, he forced the issue and he said, if you're going to hide Brunson, we're putting him in screens. And the Knicks responded by putting Brunson on Garland, and that worked for a game and a half. And then in the second half, I thought it was a great adjustment. They started Garland off ball in the corner multiple times. Even in the first half, Brunson was clearly top blocking and playing ball denial, right? And the Cavs really adjusted by having Jared Allen set away a little bit farther away from the rim, so Mitch couldn't just stay in the paint. And, you know, if you want to top block Garland, he can back cut and get to the rim. If you don't top block Garland, you're going to be in a pick and roll with Garland, and he's going to have it on the move with some speed and some space. And that's a tough situation. And that third quarter adjustment, I think, was great from Bickerstaff. And Tibbs counter-adjusted by moving Brunson off Garland. You know, the Cavs had to bring in Okoro, so that's a little bit more palatable at that point. It's actually, you know, a lot of the – it's a 3-1 series, but a lot of the X's and O's and, like, it's just been a very fascinating series. You know, how the Knicks – how the Cavs guarded – the Cavs got better at guarding the guard screens, right? Like, the Knicks killed Cleveland with guard screens, but Brunson isn't the greatest quick decision maker. And especially when you have Hart and RJ out there, you know, especially when you're setting it with Hart, because Hart isn't the greatest three-point threat, you know, Brunson started going to more one-on-ones. The Knicks decided to adjust by bringing Mitchell Robinson to the screen, which, like, I thought Mitchell Robinson was great. This is not any, like, I mean, he had 7 and 8 in the first half, a bunch of monster offensive rebounds. He had called for the most bullshit offensive rebounding call I've ever seen in my life. He literally went straight up and got it over Jarrett fucking Allen. Like, Mitchell Robinson has been amazing this series. And I think, to your point that you mentioned earlier, I think one of the reasons Hardenstein closed over him is the free throw shooting. Hey, he made 2 of 3 from free throws line tonight. I'll take 2 of 3 from Mitchell Robinson any night. You know, or 67%. Maybe that's a better way to put it. But, you know, I thought that, you know, the, like, but then, and I think it was a very easy difference. I'm not going to get into this. The Knicks started Hart's decision, or Hart's defense on Donovan Mitchell was incredible all game. Like, we should probably talk more about how the Knicks forced Donovan Mitchell in a game 4 where I thought he was really going to go off before the game. They forced him to 4 for 17, and the defense was just incredible. Deuce McBride deserves a ton of credit for, like, having Mitchell in hell then, but so does Josh Hart. And I think the Knicks, they played to, you know, they really, you know, but even when there was the traps with Hart out there, I thought Brunson got into a little bit of ISO decision making. But you could also see, like, when IQ came in, quickly came in, the Cavs respect him a lot. And, like, Brunson was very easily able to reject those screens and get to good spots because they did not want to give him the side of the screen and allow quickly and force help and allow quickly to get free. And I think that made a big difference. For some reason, Brunson went away from that. I did not love this game from Jalen Brunson. He made some incredible shots because he always will. But from a decision-making perspective, I thought he could have been a lot better. I thought we could have put this game away earlier. But, hey, with another point guard, you're not getting that shot-making either. So that's kind of the trade-off. He's still 26. But yeah, like, I think that, you know, I think they've won. They're up 3-1. And, Matt, I know I'm not trying to rip Julius Randle. I know you've been a guy who's been on Julius Randle's side for a long time, even at his lowest depths last season. I really actually like the way he's played games 1 through 3. Tonight was tough. I don't know if it was the injury. It was a quick turnaround. He's coming off an injury. It was a 36-hour turnaround. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that to make excuses. I'm saying that because I looked at him and I just didn't see a guy who had it, you know. And I it's tough not to believe that the injury didn't play a part in that. But, you know, every time he had Mobley on him, it seemed like he would take a step back three, no matter how much shot clock was left. On defense, there were multiple times he just watched rebounds or didn't help. He just didn't have it. And sometimes that happens. You know, at times it felt like that was the case for Brunson, but I wouldn't rule out the fact that the possibility that it was health-related for Randle. And I'll give Tibbs a lot of credit. He's closed with Obi Toppin, and we should talk about Obi Toppin because I don't think Tibbs closed with Obi Toppin because he's making threes or, like, making shots. He had 5 points. He had a three, and he had, like, a really nice drive on Donovan Mitchell when Mitchell was like, oh, you got no handle. I'm going to press you. And Obi was like, fuck around and find out. And Obi scored on him. it wasn't that that kept him in the game. He was extremely impressive on the glass. He had a couple of big off that that play started with an Obi going to no man's territory where only he can go, you know, in terms of vertical leap to get the rebound. He had a couple of big offensive defensive rebounds. I thought his defense was, you know, his effort was great. And the Cavs, when they tried to iso him, it was usually with guys like Chetty Osman or whatever. I thought Obi was great. And I give Tibbs a lot of credit on that note, too, for closing with Obi when that's not something he's been wont to do. I wasn't surprised he closed with Hartenstein. He's done that a lot because I think, yeah, he's a better free throw shooter than Mitch. But the Obi thing was a sign of like, yeah, Tibbs. And it's a emblematic of his whole season. He's been willing to adapt and adjust. In a way that I think a lot of Knicks fans weren't confident he could do.
Toppin's been a critical player, regardless of what his numbers have been, simply by virtue of what his presence does to the pace of a series where Cleveland wants to play as slow as they can, and the Knicks will very easily fall into that. Even if Toppin's not scoring 20 a game, his presence has been enormous. Like, every time he's been out there, he's had an impact. Which, again, you know, you're talking about maybe the eighth guy on the team is able to come in and just have that kind of an impact in a series against. I think part of what's hurting Randle, and I think when they have a few days off between games, hopefully they'll, if they see this, they'll work on it. I think Randle is running into a problem where he's mostly been guarded the entire series by one of the best defenders in the league. And Randle is still sticking to his, and I think he's there's a formulaicness sometimes to him, and it works for him. But Randle's still doing his regular season thing, which is I'm shooting threes or I'm going into the paint. I'm not doing the mid-range. I'm going to be like more efficient. And Mobley knows that, has had weeks now to prepare for it and study it. And that's why, like, Randle's not going to get a good look on a sidestep three with Mobley blanketed all over him behind the line. And as soon as he crosses the arc, Mobley knows, like, okay, he's not settling here. He's going to get closer. There were two baskets that Randle made in the game. One of them, the first one that he made in the first quarter, was this used to be, you know, wisdom, and now it's frowned upon. He pump faked from the three, and he took a step in, and he picked up for a long two, and he made it. Because there was far less pressure or expectation from the defense that he was going to take that shot. The other basket he made was some kind of a baseline fadeaway. Again, mid-range. Randle may have to make that adjustment. If teams are going to study his tape this year and see his entire profile was threes and paint, you're going to have to get into the mid-range again, probably, just to give them something to think about, especially defended by, this isn't some Joe. Evan Mobley is that guy on defense. You've got to give him something different. You got to give him a changeup.
I mean, I think if you notice in the third quarter, there were two timeouts where Tibbs was pissed and the Knicks were screwing up. And both times he set screens to get Randle a shot at 15 feet or below. The first time Randle was directly involved in a screen with Jalen Brunson. And he didn't immediately get the ball, but the help defense allowed him to get the ball on the sidestep. And he took a tough shot. He took a tough 10-foot fadeaway over, again, as to your point, Evan Mobley. But at 10 feet, Julius Randle is a different player than at 16 to 20 feet. That's something the Knicks have realized all season. It's something they've gotten away from. That was a very tough shot. And yet I wasn't surprised Randle made it because he can use his body to really protect against Mobley, so Mobley can't block the shot. And it's a shot he's just very comfortable with. And I think that what I was surprised with is they didn't get Randle involved in the screen action a lot. Another surprising thing was the Cavs survived the second quarter. This was a chance the Knicks had to blow the game open.
Yeah.
It's that Chetty Osman on Julius Randle. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't ice, you know, you have Allen Payne, you know, Randle isn't the greatest decision maker against double teams. Have him screen. Right? So if they want to switch Chetty Osman on Brunson, we win. If they want to hedge and recover, we win. And if Chetty Osman is going to, if they're going to trap, then you have Randle open for three, and we'll take those threes. And I just think – I think game two, the game plan was good. Randall – I think Randall still needs to just like – Randall hit 1-3 in game two, and then he kept pump faking when Mobley would close out on him. Like, oh, I hit a three. Mobley should close out on me like I'm Ray Allen. Like, no, that's going to happen. Their game plan is still the same. You got to shoot. And – or if you're not going to shoot, then you got to move it quickly or you got to drive immediately. But the pump fake – and then slow it down has not worked for Randall in this series. And, you know, I think that's I think that's an adjustment he's capable of making. And it's crazy. Like, to your point, I don't think he's their best player. I think we disagree there. I think Brunson is their best player, but Brunson hasn't had a great game this series yet. He had 27 on 24 shots in game one. He was not good in game two. He's made big shots all the time, and to be fair, like, I'm not saying that Brunson isn't their fail-safe on every offensive possession and hasn't made good on that, and that, like, that's a big difference between this team and the team that lost the Hawks, but, like, he has been great. And Randall has been, like, even game one, he had a great first half. Since the first half of game one, Randall's been bad on offense, mixed bag on defense. I don't think he's done much to sunk the Knicks, but without those two guys, the Knicks are 3-1. Like, that's kind of nuts. If you told me, like, neither of them was going to be, like, really good this series, and they'd be up 3-1, I would take a bet.
And mentioning what they're without, this performance and the success they had against Mitchell all came with Quentin Grimes not available after the shoulder contusion in game three. So the theme of the episode is depth, depth, depth. They lose their starting top perimeter defender and floor spacer, and they just keep on rolling. To your point about Brunson and his numbers, like, Brunson has had what you would call great 90s playoff games. Like, 27 points on 24 shots is a great – and this series, like, I'm not going to lie.
This is a 90s series.
Yeah. It's very comfortable for me to watch this series. It's very – like, I've had to dial back to my old perspective on things. And it makes a lot of sense. Like, I feel very comfortable watching games where, you know, if they're pushing, there was a point early when Cleveland was on pace for like 90 something. And I was like, what the, like, this defense is bullshit. Like, it was nice being back in that place instead of, I always in the game am calculating, like, so if this score held the rest of the game, like, this ratio, what would it be? And, like, it's one thing, like, so many games this season, it's been like, all right, this would be 130 to 118. I don't mind a 99-79 game. I don't mind the Cavs three different times not scoring 100. Like, I'm good with that.
Have the Cavs scored? They scored 100 in
game two. They had 107, I think, in game two.
The Knicks have held them under 100 points three times out of four, including the lowest scoring total of the entire season. And by the way, let's recap. The Knicks were the 18th best defense in the league by defensive rating this year. They did not. I think some of that is padded by late season. Like, if you remember the end of the season, it seemed like every team was good. They were playing the Pacers and the Pelicans, and they just didn't give a fuck. And they were like, well, if you're 140, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they were winning, but they were running.
And, you know, there was just, but, well, running wouldn't affect the points for possession. But, like, the point is, you know, but at their peak, I think they were like the ninth best offensive defensive rating team, but they've never been elite this year. They have played better on defense. And I think part of that is they just have more offensive options. And, but man, like, and I guess the question is, like, how sustainable do you think that this is? I think you see some of the flaws, but, Xavier Justin from Knicks Phillips School, great follow. You guys should follow him. He said, in a way, this is a bit of a referendum on the Knicks' philosophy. The Knicks' philosophy this season, they had the third best offense with Tom Thibodeau team because they said, we have multiple guys who can get to the paint. Jalen Brunson, Emmanuel Quickly, great mid-range. When I say mid-range, I really mean the short mid-range area, so floaters in the paint mid-range. We have those. Those lead to more offensive rebounds. We don't know how much the Knicks are using analytics, but it clearly parallels a lot of the analytics that are out on those shots. They said, we're going to win the offensive rebound battle. We're going to get the most efficient mid-range shots. And we're going to and we're not going to turn the ball over because we're an ISO heavy team. And he said, you know, this is kind of a referendum on that. After game two, it looked like, well, maybe that doesn't work. The last two games, it definitely seems like it has. And I think it could have worked a lot better. I think Brunson actually is still growing as a decision maker. We forget he's only 26. 26-year-olds aren't at their peak in terms of decision making. Lord knows I wasn't. You know, like, to what extent does that play into how you're viewing the series? Like, you know, is this a referendum if the Knicks can win it all or B, gets to that next level? And we'll see if, I mean, Milwaukee is down 2-1, by the way. I don't want to peek ahead, but after we're up 3-1 and there's a chance we might not have to face Giannis, I can't help but do that. I mean, greed is the human sin. But to what extent do you feel like, I mean, is this making you more comfortable that, like, you know, as much as we might hate some of these Brunson ISO possessions and Randall ISO possessions, that maybe this can work?
I think it's confirmation that what they tried to do last year that didn't work, I think what they learned in 2021 and they tried to address a year later, they got right this time. And you're seeing that pay off in a playoff matchup where, in one sense, what is happening is very similar to what happened 2 years ago. You get to the playoffs and your leading scorer has been completely flummoxed by the defense that he's encountering. But the difference is, this time around, you have a maybe superior option to turn to. And you see that Cleveland is no less focused on trying to stymie Brunson than Atlanta was with Randall. The difference is Brunson's better cut out for it. And Brunson is one of a couple of guys that you have now who can do that quickly. He's developed, obviously, also, and other Knicks, I think, have as well. But I think this year affirms what they learned 2 years ago that failed with Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier, which was understandable. Like, Jalen Brunson wasn't available 2 years ago. Kemba Walker was. Kemba Walker didn't cost a lot. And you could see the thinking behind it. Even though he wasn't the right piece, here was a guard who could create for himself. Even Walker, with his struggles that year, had a...
Right. Like, maybe it would have worked out the way the Derrick Rose trade did. You know, who knows?
Maybe Kemba still had a 40-something point game, but he was just on his last legs. Fournier did bring some of what they wanted. Like, he was an even more prolific three-point shooter than Reggie Bullock was. But you couldn't have Fournier and a subpar defensive guard next to him and have that team work. Like, you couldn't do it. They learned. They took new steps. They took, I think, judicious steps. Jalen Brunson cost nothing but money, already on a deal that is a bargain. They promoted a younger, more athletic player with more upside, whose ceiling becomes more evident the more minutes he gets, in Quentin Grimes. I think this year is very much an affirmation of 21, and I think, and it's the only reason I will be a little sad not to see the Bucks, but trust me, I'm not saying that I'll be sad if the Bucks aren't there. I'm curious now to see what do the Knicks learn at the next level of competition about themselves that we don't see yet or that we don't know yet. Because I think I'll look ahead, like we were talking earlier about 90s, you know, are there teams in the Knicks past that are, that this run is reminding me of? And there's two that do from the 90s. One is the 92 Knicks, which was Riley's first season with the team, because that was a team that had been okay 2 years prior, but didn't get as far as they wanted that year, and then slumped the year after to a sub-500 team, and then bounced back and brought in players. You know, you want to look at Starks and Mason and find a direct through line to Josh Hart. Like, it's there. There's a similarity there in that you have this re-energized team with a really nice core of multidimensional players who have made their stamp, like, on the conference already. The other one that just the way the East is unfolding, they remind me of also, is the 99 team. Because if you remember in 99, they beat Miami in the first round. They were going to play Atlanta. The worst second round team I ever saw was the 99 Atlanta Hawks. And
every time you're led by a Michigan State player like Steve Smith, you must be a shitty team.
I don't know why. For some reason, there was a dude. I mean, they had players. They had Mutombo.
Good idea, Ryder, right at the time.
I don't remember him being on that team. Let me check really quick. The guy that I remember, I know they had Mutombo. I know they had, I think, still Mookie Blaylock.
I know that's, like, I think that was their best offensive player, at least.
They had a dude named Chris Crawford. He was his white dude, who I had never heard of before. He had a good year for them. And he became a starter. Let's see. Yeah, Steve Smith, Mookie Blaylock, Crawford, Grant Long. No, no Isaiah Rider. Smith, Mookie, Mutombo, Grant Long, who had been in Miami, Rashawn McCloud. Not like a big team, but they had this guy, Chris Crawford, who I'd never heard of before. He was a young dude, 23, very athletic, who started for them. Random player for some reason that always, to me, epitomized like that really lousy Hawks team. The Knicks got a break in the second round. They played a much easier team than they had faced in the first round, and that gave them a pretty good open shot to the conference finals, where they met like a real legit Indiana team. I think the Knicks could get Miami in the next round. I don't know what's up with Giannis's back, but the Heat have won two games already. Obviously, Giannis, if he returns, will not be at peak condition. And if he doesn't return, who knows?
We'll need more. Even if he's not at peak, we'll need more from Julius Randle and their guy in the series. Like, we need him.
They would. Oh, certainly. But I'm just saying, like, if they get to that series, I think Cleveland is better than Miami, just like I think in 99 Miami was much better than Atlanta. But it would be a great break in the second round. And then, you know, if you think that people are excited now about the Knicks and would be excited about a series against the Heat with the conference finals on the line, imagine if waiting for you in the conference finals is the Celtics. Like, I mean, so
do you think that series would be hype? I mean,
the escalation is already unreal. Like, I've already seen
the series. $1,000. That's what I honestly think right now. If they play the Celtics,
I don't know if I could handle the sudden jump emotionally. Like, in the 90s, you got to build from year to year, but now, like, I've seen it every game, literally every game in the series. After a win, like, there is a path to the conference finals that I can see, and after the loss, it was like, you know, just.
Let's talk about the Bucks at full strength. Now, one thing is, I want to go easy on Randle because I think his effort has been
good. You realize that if we talk about the Bucks now and the Knicks lose this series,
we are
risking the ire of Knick Nation by jumping ahead like this.
Honestly, like, global warming is a threat. Like, I'm not worried about.
Are you calling the series over? Are you saying it's done?
No.
Okay.
I'm not, but it's not even like because the Knicks are 3-1 or even because they have home court advantage. It's like they just, like, the Cavs are always going to give up a good shot against the Knicks if the Knicks don't fuck up. That's how I feel. Like, the Knicks can get a good shot every possession, and that's not a knock on the Cavs defense, but the Knicks have the personnel to do that.
Why do you think the Knicks have had a level of success against a very highly ranked defense that a lot of other teams didn't seem to find?
I think they have guys at the right spots that can really stress them. I'm going to say it starts with Jalen Brunson is their first, second, and third priority. It starts with him. They want to get the ball out of his hands. The second part is the Knicks have ancillary playmakers. Who can make, so Josh Hart is great in 4-on-3. Like, give him the ball in space.
Yes.
He can make plays. He is his percentages are great as a shooter. He just can shoot enough. And then on a day like today, it's like, the thing is, like, coming to the series, you know, we did a pod with a Cavs fan. I've done pods with Cavs fans. We would always say, we're happy to let Isaac Okoro shoot. Like, the Knicks are not going to believe that Isaac Okoro can burn them. They said the same about RJ Barrett. In the last two games, that has been proven false. RJ, if you let
it seemed
RJ,
delusional to me. That's always seemed crazy to me. RJ is way out of Isaac Okoro.
They might say the same thing about Caris LeVert, but he has outplayed Caris LeVert the last two games. So in terms of the Knicks were like, we'll make Isaac Okoro beat us, and the Cavs fans said, well, we have Caris LeVert. They beat us game two. Game three, I was at the Garden. And every shot that Caris LeVert made felt like, just how is he making these? He finished with 17 points and 17 shots. RJ Barrett has put down not only two good scoring performances, but two very efficient scoring performances with playmaking attached. So to your point, yeah, it's delusional. Or it was a much more higher upside play for the Knicks. Like, let RJ Barrett beat us is a lower percentage strategy than let Caris LeVert or certainly Isaac Okoro beat us. I also think that the Cavs are a great team. Like, I'm not going to denounce them, but the Knicks can body that. Like, Mitchell Robinson was incredible on the glass. Isaiah Hartenstein has been incredible on the glass. They can do those things, and if you want to play as aggressive with your bigs, you know that. Julius Randle has been good on the glass for the first two games. I don't know what was up with Julius Randle today. I know I've said it 15 times in this pod. But then at the end, Obi Toppin had a huge offensive rebound. I thought he was terrific. He really, and, you know, we'll get into it later, but, like, it is shocking, like, how many guys on the Knicks who you could probably argue, like, man, if I was Obi Toppin, I'd be like, I'm a really good, I can jump out of the gym. I'm a smart player. I can pass the ball. I run the court like my ass is on fire. Like, I really try hard. I can handle the ball a little bit. I can shoot, you know, close to the league average, and I'm getting 13 minutes a game. It'd be very easy for him to kind of go into his shell and say, you know, fuck this. And he hasn't done that all season. He didn't do it last season. He did it the year before. He instead, on a night when they really needed him because Julius Randle didn't have it, came up with – but he did it with those plays. And it's funny because I think – I don't know if it was this pod or, you know, I was on a pod. I was talking about it before with someone. And they were like, you know, Isaiah Hartenstein struggled for the first third of the year. He started to rebound at a much better level, started to block shots at a much better level. And then Tibbs was like, okay, now you can operate at the top of the key, throw some of these backdoor passes. Like, now we can – like, he didn't let him do the Hartenstein stuff. And he had to do the other stuff. And I wonder if that could happen with Obi. But to answer your question, I think it's the fact that the Knicks have a legitimately – a guard who, like, there is no bad shot for Jalen Brunson. That's a thing. Like, he's going to not shoot great every time, but he can always get a shot that is makeable. The other part is that the Cavs thrive on turnovers. The Knicks are a team that limits turnovers. The one game they turned the ball over a lot, they got blown out. They've generally limited them. The Cavs are a weak defensive rebounding team. The Knicks have beat them in offensive on the glass. And the last thing is the Knicks are a team that loves to overhelp, and the Cavs are a very top-heavy team that doesn't have ancillary threats that can beat you. Like, yeah, this is, you know, I think that in terms of – if you told me, like, if you played an 82-game season and you were like, who's going to finish with the better record, there's a lot of reason to believe the Cavs would. I think especially since the Hart trade, they're, like, pretty even on that level. But, like, other than the Knicks are way better than the Cavs, I think they match up extremely well with them for the reasons I listed.
If you add Mikal Bridges to either one of these teams, are they a title contender?
That's a really good question. So if you replace Isaac Okoro with Mikal Bridges.
And RJ.
Well, RJ is a tough one to pick on tonight. But you have to replace a starter, I assume, right?
Yeah.
I think the Knicks are and the Cavs aren't. That might sound biased.
Still no on the Cavs, huh?
Yeah.
Why is that? Because of depth still?
Because, like, I think that if you face a team, part of it is, like, it is. This is another thing Quickley does. When Quickley is the guy on LeVert, LeVert isn't scoring because Quickley is great at helping and closing out. His recovery speed isn't. He moves like a defensive back in football. There are teams that I think Milwaukee would be able to still do that to Mikal Bridges. But on the Knicks, if you do that, they just have more options, right? They have more players to swing it to. And if you're closing out like that, the Knicks are a better rebounding team. So I think that the Knicks could be, but the thing is, RJ Barrett showed his value because Brunson was really in a funk for a large part of the second half. Like, I have said that Brunson is the best part of his team. He's who transforms them into a great team. But Randle was basically a no-show. I don't think that's unfair to say, at least on offense. And the defense is worse. Quickly, I thought, got good shots, couldn't get them to fall. I thought he made good decisions. I do think Quickly, like, when he screens for Brunson, it creates way more space than when Hart does. It's not because he's bigger or sets bigger screens, but it's because the Cavs are more worried about Quickly flaring out to three than they are with Brunson. So Brunson can, or than they are with Hart, so Brunson can reject the screen. He has more options. But Quickly didn't have it going. RJ was like, you know, and that's kind of something because, you know, we did a Pod Strickland's pod with John Schmelk, and he said, you know, one guy for the Knicks to look at is Zach LaVine. And if you know Schwinn is like on trading for Zach LaVine. I'm not a big fan of it either because I think Brunson can get you those shots. But the reality is the Knicks probably are not at the optimal level of shot creation. And Barrett gave that to them tonight when Brunson was a little bit hit or miss and Randall was really struggling the whole game. And it was really Barrett who was able to get to where he wanted at will. And when the Cavs collapsed on him, he was making good decisions. Like, I mean, it's tough for me to not, like, I know I've been circling every conversation back to RJ Barrett, but it's tough to not because he was awesome tonight.
Let me ask you this. If you could trade straight up RJ or Grimes for Bridges, who would you trade?
I would still trade RJ. I guess a little more.
But just like fit-wise?
Fit-wise, I mean, give me, if the thing is, Brunson is still the guy and RJ and Randall is still going to be the guy. I'm not going to change that on one game. And so if you have a borderline all NBA defender who can knock down threes like Mitch Bridges can, you know, it's tough to argue for that because RJ is still like, I thought RJ's shooting performance, like the numbers are going to underlie what it was. I think he took good shots. He had a couple of them were just like halfway down and rimmed out.
Yeah, he did.
I know Grimes is going to be a 40% 3-point shooter. I know he's going to be great at the point of attack. And I know he can do it for 82 games. RJ has been great this series, and like that matters a lot more than, you know, a lot of the regular season games. But I haven't seen him put together a whole season of great defense. So
let me give you one last question. I'm going to throw a series of numbers at you and then ask you about it. So for Cleveland today, Jared Allen played 40 minutes. Donovan Mitchell played 42. LeVert played 39. Mobley played 35, but had 6 fouls. And Garland played 36, but had 4 fouls. I see those numbers and I watch these games, and two things come to mind to me. One is, so far, Mitchell and Garland have not really both been great in the same game. And I'm wondering if that's systemic. In this playoff setting, like obviously in the regular season, they both had games where they were hitting, but I'm wondering in this series, I haven't watched them and seen like, oh, they're so close to both blowing up. If just a couple shots from them, haven't seen that. And when I see the minutes that the starters are playing, and this was both games in New York, and even late in the Cleveland blowout, Bickerstaff had his guys in very late. To me, that looks like Cleveland doesn't have any other ideas.
Wait, did you
they say would have played all 5 starters 40 minutes if not for foul trouble? And it's not like those starters were kicking ass the whole game. That just tells me, I don't know if they have the depth or the ideas, not just to win, but to offer, I know I'm inviting the jinx here, but to offer any kind of a meaningful adjustment like they did in game 2. Because it just seems like, okay, the Knicks responded and you're just going to play your 5 guys as close to 48 minutes as you can.
Well,
they look to me like a team that has an idea what to do.
So did you, so I was told that Tom Thibodeau was being an asshole because he played Julius Randle at the end of game 2. Are you saying that there was a cat, their Cavs starters were still in? let's say, was Jared Allen still in the game at that point? And would you call Jared Allen an important player?
He was, because he assaulted Randall with about 2 minutes left in that game, 2.5 minutes left.
Yeah, and then Randall assaulted him. I haven't gotten to talk about, but like, if you guys can get to a Knicks playoff game, I highly recommend it. When Randall just stole deservedly so. And then immediately came back and hit a three on Mobley. That was I've never like the Garden was just insane all game. I didn't get to go today. I mean, this is like everyone has said, the Knicks, it doesn't matter. The Cavs have the best player in the series. The Knicks depth doesn't matter, and it's been proven wrong all series. This is a really well-built team. Like, we just have to accept that, and maybe it won't matter as much. Like, maybe Giannis is that different level of star versus versus Donovan Mitchell, and he probably is. And, I mean, they're just a bad – like, there's things like if and when Mobley learns to shoot or can shoot from outside the paint, that is going to be – this Knicks team isn't beating that team. If Mobley is a threat from outside the arc. I think that's a and I think that that's a big problem the Bucks pose is like, you know, the Knicks have great interior defense, but if Mitchell Robinson has to worry about Brook Lopez out of three, it compromises things, right? I think Randle is strong enough to kind of deal with Giannis, but it's Giannis. And they can throw Jrue Holiday at Brunson. It's a tough team. So, you know, I don't, but to answer your question, like, I think that they gave a lot of – I think they had good adjustments. Like, they getting Garland involved off ball was a good one. One thing they haven't gone to a ton, which I'm curious to see if we will, if the Knicks are going to put Brunson on Garland, they didn't screen for Mitchell with Garland much. And that gives you the same effect, right? The reason that they – the reason the Knicks have to switch was they had Brunson on LeVert. So they said, all right, I'll make Brunson defend as the roll man and pick and roll. Yeah, there's a switch. Or if they're hedging, LeVert's going to be open. Or he has to hedge and recover, which he's not great at. That works. You can do that with Mitchell. If Garland is being guarded by Brunson, they didn't do that a ton. I'm curious to see if they do that. But, like, they're playing – besides LeVert, they play – I thought Okoro actually played really good defense. For as limited as his offensive repertoire is, I thought he did a good job of recognizing when the Knicks were giving him real space and getting to the rim. He had some nice finishes. He hit a three. But that's, you know, you're punting away essentially on one end on offense. You're expecting Mitchell and Garland to be incredible to make up for Okoro. And Osman and Danny Green just haven't moved the needle at all. And what, I mean, Rubio has played. That hasn't worked at all.
No. No.
They need Mitchell and Garland to go nuclear, which I think that they have the ability to do that, but for 48 minutes, it's tough. And I think that I wouldn't be worried about the Cavs long term because I think like Mobley will get to the level where like he can be that third, if not second guy. Like he's that he's gonna be that good at some point. And you saw like he had flashes today, right? Like he has once you let him get the ball deep, he can dunk from 3 feet away because his arms are long and he's that athletic, but right now he's not that. And yeah, I mean, I think the Knicks are in the driver's seat.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice.
I just ask this before we leave.
Yeah.
This Nick, I have said this a lot. Josh Hart seems to be the quintessential '90s Nick, but the whole team, like you saw how they're like that second quarter, the way they defended. I haven't talked about Deuce McBride at all. Like I think Donovan Mitchell is going to be seeing Deuce McBride in his sleep. McBride played 5 minutes. I don't think Donovan Mitchell scored. He had to try this Hail Mary shot. It's just crazy to see that from a second-year player against an all-NBA player. It wasn't that much of difficulty, but we've seen that from Deuce McBride before. I thought he was incredible. Kudos to RJ for setting him up for an open three. Deuce knocked it down. But it was just him. It was Hart. I think Quickly has been incredibly engaged on ball, on defense the last couple games. I thought this is the best Mitchell Robinson has looked on defense in his career. Does this team remind you of any of the past Knicks teams? And how do we contextualize it? Because it's been a long 20 years. They haven't been great. But I also think that, you know, if you watch some of those 90s teams or for fans who watched, you know, the 70s Knicks, I get why you might be a little bit upset comparing this team to those teams. But I think you've seen a lot of that and you're very knowledgeable on history. You know, where does this – how would you contextualize this Knicks teams in that historical – I just used the word context 15 times, but that historical context.
Besides the 92 and 99 Knicks, I think if you want to go back further, a parallel you could draw is probably to the 68 team where the Knicks at that point had, they were just building up into what they were becoming. They had not had a history of success as a team yet. They had not added the final pieces that they needed yet. They didn't have DeBuscher yet. But they had foundational pieces. Holzman was there. Reed, Frazier were there. I think Bradley was there. Barnett was there. They had a lot of pieces there, and they were just starting. They weren't at that level. They met, I think they played the Celtics that year, and the Celtics handled them. But they were coming. And then it was the next year was when they added DeBuscher. And then it was the next year when they won the title. I think this Knicks team, I don't think...
Was Josh Hart the DeBuscher trade for this team?
They got the rights to Josh Hart in that trade. That's why it was such a good deal. They got so much for it. No, I can't put Hart there yet because Hart... DeBuscher was the finishing piece. Hart's not the finishing piece. Hart's a great piece. Hart advances them. Hart is a, whatever you want to call him, force multiplier, floor raiser, ceiling raiser, all that stuff. But DeBuscher was literally like, you know, the crowning, that's it. Like, Voltron is now working. Everything is together. Hart is not quite at that, Hart's not at that level of impact, not yet. If they change pieces around, maybe he could be that way. I was very curious during the regular season if Hart is a better fit as a type of three for them than Barrett, depending on what you surround him with, particularly if you're going to chase another star who can score. Then I can see Hart's significance growing. But he's not the DeBuscher yet. But the playoffs are young. And again, he had, you know, one of the definitive shots of the game today. It's this crazy turnaround late in, that only Josh Hart would make, where he wasn't even looking to shoot, and he got it cutting into the lane, and like he just literally had to turn around, and you knew it would go in because it was Hart, just like the shot he made late in game one to give them the lead. Like, Hart would make that shot, so he's special. But I'm gonna hold off on the DeBuscher to this point. But they do remind me of that team, and I wrote about this shortly before the playoffs. Like, enjoy these teams and these moments, because this is basically your perfect storm of my team is playing awesome and I am not crushed by expectations yet. That's going to start next year, and that's going to be a lot of fun for a lot of Knicks fans to adjust to. Right now, 92 was a blast in part because there was no formed expectations. So they collapsed at the end of that season. They blew the division. They dropped from the 2 seed to the 4 seed. Everybody was pissed because that put them in the Chicago bracket for the second round, and it gave them the Pistons in the first round, which nobody wanted that. If they had won the division, they would have played the Pacers. And this is the Chuck Person, not the Pacers of later years. But that team they played Detroit in a very tough, even first round that went the limit. It was thrilling. It was exhilarating. It was physical. It was brutal. Hard fouls and a lot of chippiness, and it was such a rush when they won. And if this team wins this series, the rush is going to be unreal. I'm already pumped for it, not only as a fan, but like, I've never covered the Knicks winning a playoff series. I started covering them in 14, so I have never had the experience of writing about the Knicks advancing. I'm pumped about that. And then when they got to the next round, playing the dominant team with the dominant player in the sport, there were no expectations. So everything that came was gravy. 92 was much more fun than 93, 94. 92 was the most fun year the Knicks had until 99. Because every year in between, some sort of expectation was disappointed. And that's what the focus was. It wasn't as fun at the time as people like to talk like it was. It really wasn't. 93 ended brutal. Okay. You had consecutive home games. You went from the dunk to Charles Smith. That was a brutal year. 94, so close and you lose. Brutal year. 95, you lose on a finger roll. 96, Riley's not there anymore. You're trying to find your way as an organization. 97 is the PJ Brown fight. 98 is Ewing breaking his wrist. There was nothing fun between 92 and 99. And obviously I'm exaggerating, there was, but a lot of people missed it because their focus was only on expectations. So for this team, this season, I am luxuriating in the fact that I have had no didn't come into the season with an expectation of a record, or I had no idea what the team would be. So everything has been gravy. So whether it's Milwaukee or Miami in the next round, I'm going to take what they give me. I'm going to be very, very happy. I encourage other people to do the same.
Tough to argue with that.
What's that?
Tough to argue with that.
I'm sorry, I can't hear what you're saying.
Tough to argue with that.
Yeah. Hopefully. But again, the swings are so crazy that if they lose game five, ask me then how I feel. No idea.
Yeah, no idea. I said this would go seven games earlier. I'm not ruling that out yet, but the Knicks have been really dominant. The third quarter, they got punched in the mouth. And honestly, at the third quarter, I thought like, oh, this is going to end up a blowout. They're the last desperate team. The Cavs are really locked in. And they responded, and they won this game healthily. So the Knicks are good. We can just admit that.
Yeah, we have every reason right now to be very happy with your team up 3-1 and with the momentum. Next game will be Wednesday evening in Cleveland. Knicks have won there, counting the regular season, at least a couple times already this year. So fingers crossed. We will probably, I'm sure we'll do an episode either right before then or right afterwards. If, I'm just going to tell you right now in advance, if the Knicks advance on Wednesday, Wednesday is my payday, and Wednesday is when I go out and get all of my fun little edibles and flowers and shit. So if we are doing, if we're on the air Wednesday night after the Knicks have won game five, I'm going to be really happy. I'm just letting everybody know.
Now we have to do that.
I'm going to be really happy. And if they lose, I'm going to be really happy because I'm going to need that medicine to get me through the game five loss. So either way, we will see you on Wednesday night or Thursday after something has happened. Remember, the Believe Nick podcast is presented by Bet Online. It's also presented by Stacy and me. That's all for now. We will see you all in a couple days, hopefully with the Knicks on the verge of round two, whoever the opponent may be.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.